The Heavens Heard Him. Chapter 6. A hurdy-gurdy in Piazza Spagna was grinding out the Blue Danube. The tune drew Pietro to the eye-level window in his cellar room and reminded him of another waltz and his homecoming from Torino. Disinterestedly, he gazed into the square while he thought of the 5 years he had spent here in Rome. Now, in retrospect, they seemed like 5 months. Where had they gone? Yesterday, he was a half-shy ragazzino, highly impressed with the austerity of St. Cecilia's Academy. Today, he was 1 inch from his degree. He hummed along with the street organ, wondering if someday he would be able to compose music that would be as famous as this Strauss waltz. As he turned from the window to his packing, the lilting refrain set his pace, for there was a song in his heart also. Exams were over. Tomorrow he was going home. Home to Settimo and his mountains and his family. Yes, there was a song in his heart, but there was a soreness in his body. He found it difficult to sit, for during the pre-final period of intensive study, keeping to an 18-hour-a-day schedule, he had severely tried that portion of his anatomy and blisters had developed. These broke and multiplied. With extreme care, he would balance himself on his hands while warming his seat slowly against the bench. This process would heat the area and lessen the pain so that he could sit and play. With a pitch, Pietro flung his worn-out mountain boots to a rubbish pile in the corner of the room. Then he let his mind drift back over his past summer, one of the hottest in the history of Rome, and thought of the endless hours spent at the scarred piano perfecting his technique. The hurdy-gurdy switched to Santa Lucia, and over its melody Pietro heard the bell of San Giovanni strike 7. With keen anticipation, he turned from packing and placed studs in a white shirt on the bed and smoothed a pair of black trousers affectionately. Most of the sores had healed, so he could now sit without the warming-up exercises and acrobatics. Therefore, tonight he had planned a treat. He and his erstwhile professor and friend, Leopoldo Bucci, were going to the last performance of Aida together. It had taken ingenuity, but Pietro was determined that tonight would be his night. Many times he had felt the sting of seeing his wealthier friends, attired in full dress, pull up in carriages with dignity under the marquee of the theater. Tonight he would go in style. Carefully, he had counted his few lira, put aside some for a spare meal and train fare, and spent the rest on two luxuries, one of which was the rental of evening clothes. At 8 o'clock sharp, decked out smartly, he strolled to within 2 blocks of the opera house. Then he hailed a carriage, which was the second of his indulgences. Thus, with his last pennies, he staged his entrance with satisfaction. Self-assured, he walked down the long aisle and took his place beside the professor. After the performance, the two men went to Gianni's, a somewhat dilapidated bistro off Piazza Santa Chiara near the Pantheon. Here the food was delicious, the prices within reach, and a violinist played soulfully for the diners. As they consumed a bottle of Orvieto, Bucci asked his student, "How's your culo?" "A lot younger than yours," returned Pietro with an amusement, though a little the worse for the wear at the moment. The professor's kindly eyes smiled. "Pietro," he said, "I want to talk seriously for a moment." "Senti, exams are over." He waved the idea away. "Let's eat and enjoy ourselves." The older man would not be silenced. "I have something to say, and I'm going to say it right now. I've met a lot of students, good, bad, and indifferent. I want you to know that I've never received such pleasure from my own profession as in teaching you." He paused, and looked straight at the young lad facing him. "Keep your simplicity and willpower, and nothing can stop you. You once told me you were aiming at the sky, remember? I doubted you then, but I know you better now. Short of destiny, you are going high in the sky. I just wanted you to know what I felt." He ended, embarrassed, at his own unusual outburst. The student found his eyes wet and his throat dry. For a second, he examined his fork. Then, quietly, he said, "That, Leopoldo, was the most beautiful thing I ever had said to me." "See," the other patted his shoulder. "Now, andiamo, tomorrow is your big day. By the way, didn't you tell me your sister Lena had gone to America to join Constantino?" "Yes," Pietro sighed. "I think, next to Papa, I never missed anyone as much as that ragazzina. I wish she could see me in evening clothes." He carefully brushed some crumbs from his pants. After the waiter had finally responded to Bucci's nod, the two friends strolled into the cool night. "Ciao," the professor said as he held out his hand. There was a tenderness of devotion in the youth's voice as he replied, "Buonasera." The next morning the sun added its enthusiasm as if it, too, was celebrating the greatness of the day. Pietro felt the harmonious mood as he walked to the university for the graduation exercises in the early afternoon. As he entered the large amphitheater, he saw that half of the 1,000 seats were already taken. He paused to admire a large banner that draped the theater curtain. Upon it, in gold letters, was the simple phrase, "Ars Gratia Artis," with the emblem of the she-wolf and her suckling young, standard of the city and its university. Purposely he dodged the page boy coming toward him and took a seat in the rear, where he would be little noticed. Dressed in gray knickers and sport jacket, with goggles about his neck, he was prepared for the soot and smoke of the long train ride home. He had no desire to be located in the center of the plush and gold hall along with the aristocracy. His mind was on his degree and his 5 o'clock train. Yet, as he watched many of his fellow classmen arrive with their parents, he suddenly yearned for his own. He could almost see them there, yes, even his mother, walking up the aisle by his side, well-groomed and taking a place in the third row. "Non importa," he mused. "The main thing is what I put in my head." For a moment he allowed his mind to wander to his mountains. The chestnut trees would be shedding their fruit, and the sun would be slowly coming down the stair-like levels of the vineyards to drape the valley in its warm glow. "Homesick," he sighed. "Now I get homesick." A bugle sounding the royal call interrupted his thoughts, and he rose to his feet. Silence covered the hall as all eyes turned to the upper rear of the theater, and the royal box with its gold emblem of Savoy and rich purple drapery. A loud voice announced, "Their royal majesties, the king and queen, Victor Emmanuel III of Savoy." Promptly the orchestra in the pit broke into the royal anthem, while the audience stood at attention. Pietro could not take his eyes from the king. He admired the strong features and the quiet dignity that they displayed. He knew he was called the Little King, and everyone felt he was a fine one, and now, seeing him for the first time, the mountain boy stood erect with pride. "He's from mia parte," he said to himself. According to long-standing custom, one of the most respected members of the faculty was invited each year to present the degrees and awards. In a moment, Professor Bucci stepped forward and was introduced as the one chosen for this year's exercises. "Why, the old beggar," thought Pietro, "he never told me." Bucci, tall and striking, walked to the stand. He looked out over the large audience and bowed to the center box. "Your Majesties, ladies and gentlemen," he began, "I am deeply honored, and I will do the graduates the honor of being brief." He did as he said. His words were purposeful and to the point. Only as he closed did he allow his depth of feeling to come to the surface as he said, may I recommend that you deal with your art with respect and dignity. Centuries of labor by those who have gone before demand this of you. Salute, Godspeed, and good music. Applause almost drowned his final words. Now it is my pleasure to present the awards and degrees. He scanned a list in his hand, then glanced at a nearby table where velvet boxes containing gold and silver medals had been placed. His voice grew louder. First prize for originality and proficiency in composition is awarded to Pietro Jan. A ripple of applause greeted this announcement. Pietro was startled. It had not occurred to him that he might receive an award, and he sat too stunned to move. Suddenly, strong arms dragged him erect, and he looked up into the smiling faces of a couple of fellow students. He gulped hard, scanned his weird attire, and started up the middle aisle. Light applause sounded again as he accepted the little box. His teacher's voice silenced the hall as he said, "Congratulations, Maestro Jan." The title, officially applied for the first time, sent a chill down the young lad's spine. He bowed his thanks and started back, but Professor Bucci restrained him with one hand and again commanded attention. "Your Majesties, ladies and gentlemen, once in a great while a professor finds himself thoroughly astounded. It is my turn today. This student beside me has accomplished all major subjects in 5 years, courses that usually take 11, and he has surpassed previous records with his total average." The ripple crescendoed to loud applause. "Furthermore," Professor Bucci went on, holding up a hand for silence, "since Maestro Jan has won every award and would be subjected to considerable exercise this afternoon if he had to keep going up and down the center aisle, it is my pleasure to hand the 11 prizes to him together." As the hall echoed with a thunder of appreciation, the youth could feel a seething within him, and before his eyes swept a vision of a little tattered mountain boy, the cold, half-hungry student in Torino, both with a savage will to succeed. With pride, he drew himself straight and looked at the audience. As he observed the sea of faces before him, an inner gaze crossed another expanse to America, to the brother who had given him his chance in Torino and had thus made possible the triumph of this moment. He recalled that memorable night when he had dashed into his village home to announce that he had won the bicycle race. The same excitement was now racing in strong currents through his body. Pietro watched Professor Bucci's face as the older man talked on. He knew his cheeks were flaming with the sudden shock of such extreme praise, yet in a few seconds he forgot his blushes and even his unusual attire as he thrust back his shoulders like a young conqueror. He only heard half the complimentary words of his teacher, for his thoughts were clinging to the scene at the dinner table, the evening of the bike race, when his father and Constantino had told him of their plans. Now there echoed down the corridors of his memory his own words, "I'll make you proud of me, very proud." For a fleeting moment he remembered the look of devotion and sheer admiration that had suffused his mother's face. He had come a long way since then, a long, hard way. He straightened to attention again as he realized that this present acclaim was just the beginning on the arduous road to glory. Once more determination pricked through his consciousness as his last words on that unforgettable night flashed like a neon sign through his mind. "Can't you hear my music?" Tumultuous applause snapped him from his reverie, but the cheers he heard seemed not to be those of people honoring a graduate student, but rather the applause of continents as he played around the world. He received the velvet containers with becoming grace, and bowed to the appreciative audience, though his hands shook with emotion. Then it happened. A command from the king was brought by messenger to the stage. Pietro took the slip of paper which requested him to come to the royal box. Suddenly He became overwhelmed by the shabbiness of his appearance. He looked at Professor Bucci with an expression of hesitation showing on his face. "The king wants to see me," he whispered. Then he glanced at his worn knickers. "I can't go like this." Immediately came the thought, "If only I hadn't bothered about that dress suit last night. But I didn't know. I didn't." "Give me your medals. I'll take them for you. A king's command." The older man's voice insinuated that there was no alternative. He hadn't finished before the lad's eagerness returned, and he started up the staircase. Quickly, in a low voice, the professor said, "Pietro, decoro." Instinctively, the young man dropped to one knee before the queen. Then, taking courage, he said, "Your majesties will forgive my attire. I'm dressed for my train ride home." The high-pitched voice of the king replied, "My boy, clothes do not make the man. Vieni, here, sit beside me. I'm told you are from Piedmonte." Without further ado, his majesty broke into the provincial dialect. "Bravo! Veramente bravo! Your feat, as far as I know, is unparalleled in the history of this or any other European university. I have been touched and inspired today, particularly since I was informed of your struggle and background." Pietro listened to his words with exhilaration, but looked straightforwardly at the monarch as he said, "Grazie, your majesty." The other smiled intimately. "Young man, I expect to hear more from you. I wish you every good fortune. You deserve it." The new maestro was by now at the peak of internal frenzy. His eyes blazed with a delirium of joy as he bowed and accepted the offered hand. "Now, will you please play for us?" It was more of a command than a question. Pietro hesitated, thinking of his blisters and his warming-up exercises. Then he threw all considerations to the winds as he said, "With pleasure, your majesty." The queen turned gentle eyes on him as she murmured, "Your family will be very proud." As he stepped from the royal box, he was surrounded by several students who led him to the piano, and without regard for his tortured member, he sat down on the bench. With a wince of pain, he realized that the last of his blisters had just broken. However, still carried along on the wave of his triumph, he brushed his discomfort aside and burst feverishly into Chopin's Polonaise, letting the instrument be the outlet for his happiness. He played with his eyes shut, damp tears on his cheeks, and a prayer in his heart. As he ended the number, there was a split second of silence. Then deafening applause filled the hall. As Pietro bowed, he saw the king standing in his box, beating his hands together. He bowed again in acknowledgment of the honor and dashed from the stage. As he fled toward the washroom to attend to his blisters, a priest pursued him and clasped his arm. "I am Father Young from America," he said. "Before I left for Europe, your brother Constantino told me you were graduating from St. Cecilia's." "How's Constant?" Pietro interrupted with eagerness. "He's fine," replied the priest. "I wish he could have been here tonight to share in your success. He would have been very proud." The young musician looked into the other man's eyes. "I am the one who is proud tonight, proud that I have a brother like Constantino. He's the one who had faith in me and gave me my start. The success I have earned is due to him. Sure, I worked, I struggled, but give him the credit." Father Young smiled. "You're very modest, Pietro. I heard you play, Maestro Jan." He paused. "You have earned that title. We need a new organist and director of music in my church, St. Francis Xavier in America. Have you ever thought of coming to America?" The mountain lad looked bewildered. "Yes, but America is a long way off. I've just graduated. I must make some money first." The priest shook his head. "If you want to come and be the director of music in my church, the contract is yours." He drew a paper from his pocket and wrote his address upon it as he talked. Think it over. He handed the paper to Pietro. Your passage over will be paid, and your salary will be $100 a week. As they shook hands, the young musician felt a warmth in the other's clasp and saw tenderness in his eyes that touched his heart. In a trance, Pietro bathed the injured part of his anatomy. Then quickly he made his way to a deserted chapel and quietly knelt to pray. Intermingled with his prayers of thanksgiving, there came to his lips a portion of the 23rd Psalm, "My cup runneth over." Before he left, he dropped again to his knees in the aisle before the crucifix, crossed himself, and said aloud, "Dear God, this is not my victory, but yours. You put the music in my heart." Tears of gratitude flowed unrestrainedly down his cheeks, and through the midst of tears, he raised his head and looked at the cross.